Tell me a little bit about you. You were born in one of the smaller cities in Canada.
Yeah, I think probably for an American listener, when he thinks of where I grew up, he should think of North Dakota. It's about the same thing. I grew up in a place called Saskatchewan. That was the province, and the small town I grew up in was Esterhazy. It was a farming community and a mining community of about 2,500 people. I was born there, and I spent all my life there until I was 17, and then I moved to another small city. I've spent practically all of my life in that one province.
The city in the novel, My Present Age, is not defined, but I think you did make reference at one spot to the fact that it had a population of 150,000. Is that Saskatchewan?
Well, it's roughly, the geography of the novel's roughly based on Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, which is a city that I've lived in probably for 7 or 8 years ago. I used it as a grid and changed it when I had to in terms of geography and the rest of it. So it's roughly based on that city. The weather is certainly the weather of Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, very, very frigid.
Yes, I noticed there are repeated references to the weather in your stories.
When I left just before Christmas to go to Eastern Canada, the back axle of my car was frozen solid. It had to be towed out with a tow truck and left about 25-foot strips of rubber down the road because the wheels wouldn't turn. So give you some idea of how cold it was. It was minus 40 for 7 or 8 days with a 45-mile-an-hour wind, so it's cold there.
But you're used to that.
You never get used to that.
Well, I noticed that people who write stories, for T. Garagason Boyle, for example, is a writer who is now living in Los Angeles, and none of his stories make any reference to the weather.
Well, you can't forget about the weather there. I met a Canadian writer who came from British Columbia, which is our banana belt, and he said life's easy in British Columbia. You can get drunk and fall down in the winter and sleep through the night and make it. You can't do that in Saskatchewan. You're always aware of the weather there, especially in the winter. People die if they go out on the road without what we call survival gear. So the weather's an omnipresent thing.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. I went to university there, and I'd gone to primary school and secondary school in this small town, Esterhazy, Saskatchewan. So I was educated entirely within the province.
It's interesting you said that where you grew up is the equivalent of North Dakota. I guess you're the equivalent of the American Midwesterner.
I suppose, yes. Very much the same thing. I know with cable television and that sort of thing that if you watch TV that comes from Bismarck, for instance, North Dakota, the people are almost indistinguishable in some ways from the people I grew up with. Very small communities, rural, everything basically centered around farming, and even ethnically very much the same. The Germans in North Dakota, the Scandinavians, the same thing in my province, a large number of Eastern European people who often settled in colonies, in communities, so that you find a town which is all Swedish, or the town that I grew up in, which was basically Hungarian and Czechoslovakian, which reminds me of Willa Cather's novels and short stories about Czech communities in Nebraska. So it's very similar, I think.
Is Vandenhaeg a German name?
No, it's Belgian, actually. I was an anomaly. I think there was one Belgian in the entire town. That was my grandfather. So that's there aren't many Belgians in Saskatchewan.
Well, the only other Belgian I know is Hercule Poirot.
That's right. Well, Hercule Poirot and a few painters, Magritte and people like that. But the Belgians are not one of those highly prominent ethnic groups, I don't think.
Where are you living now?
I'm living in Ottawa. I've recently moved there to do some creative writing, teaching at the University of Ottawa. I've gone there for a year as a break. I've never really done that before. So I'm in Eastern Canada now.
Mm-hmm. When did you get out of school?
I graduated, I guess it would have been about 1973, and then after several years I went back to Teachers College and took another year in about 75. So I guess I've been out of school about 10 years now.
What did you do between 73 and 75?
I worked in an archive. I studied history rather than literature, so I worked in a provincial archives up until that point, and then we moved, and I thought at that time that I was going to be a teacher, so I decided that I wanted to teach.
What in your early origins in Saskatchewan might have led one to believe that you would be a writer someday, if anything?
Almost none, except I come from a storytelling family. I think I have uncles who are great raconteurs. They're not educated men, but they tell stories almost better than anyone I've known. And there's kind of oral tradition where I grew up, too, of storytelling in pool rooms and what we call beer parlors rather than bars. And a very lively kind of folk culture. And I think I absorbed that listening to just sitting in the pool room or when I got old enough in the beer parlor and listening to people tell stories. And I suppose, like almost every writer, I liked to read. And at a very early age began to read and have always read and loved books. But I suppose if that's an indication, that's the only indication there was until I was in my early 20s and decided to try to write.
Well, your first book was a collection of short stories, Man Descending. That was published when in Canada?
1982.
And that was made up of a collection of stories that you had written and published. It looks to me they were all Canadian magazines, is that correct?
Yes, they're all Canadian magazines, but basically small literary magazines in Canada. There are a few that were published in larger Canadian, I suppose you'd call them commercial magazines, the equivalent of The Atlantic or whatever, like Saturday Night. But basically they were in literary magazines and published from, I guess, when I was in my early 20s up until my late 20s.
Well, the anti-hero of your novel, My Present Age, makes his first appearance in Man Descending. Ed, I don't think he has a last name.
No, he doesn't. He's just Ed.
Yes, Ed. Well, tell me about Ed and Victoria. Ed appears in at least two stories, including the title story. Of course, his most dramatic appearance is throughout the novel. On whom is Ed based?
Ed Bass isn't really based on anyone. He's drawn from a number of people who have some of his characteristics, physical and emotional. Also, he's very loosely, this will sound strange, he's very loosely based on Søren Kierkegaard, the Danish philosopher, who in his social life actually went out of his way to make himself obnoxious as a way of standing against the crowd. So I suppose in the novel My Present Age, I have a quotation from Kierkegaard's The Present Age, in which he talks, it was written in the 1840s, about his generation in Denmark. And Kierkegaard, in a way, set his face against his generation. Ed, in a much more ambivalent and childish way, is setting his face against his generation. And basically, I suppose that's how I got the idea of Ed, and then I drew on characteristics of people I've known and my imagination.
Yes, Ed strikes me as the class clown, the kid who acts out in class because he is not succeeding very well in anything else he does. You phrased it well, making himself obnoxious, and Ed certainly does that. Tell me, how did you go about setting up My Present Age in terms of writing? Was this a well-sculptured novel? Did you plan the beginning and the middle and the end, or do you do what a lot of writers do, just sit down there and start to write? Taking into account, of course, that the character Ed was vivid in your mind, as was Victoria.
Yeah, the novel is a continuation of the two short stories. So I had a storyline of a sort that I was going to follow, and I knew roughly how it was going to end because I was postulating a certain outcome given a personality and circumstances. The novel's also loosely structured around the idea of a quest. Ed is searching for his estranged wife, through this winter city. So that gave the general shape of the book. And then the incidents were, I suppose, grew organically, is the best that I can say, out of what had come before. So the book, in a sense, has a fairly loose shape, and then it's segmented into more coherent parts, I suppose.
How does your work fit in, and I don't know if this is a fair question or not, but I'm going to take a stab at it. How does your work fit in with the type of literature that is being written, the type of writing that is coming out in Canada today?
Well, in some ways, I think in Canada, I'm thought of as a regionalist, perhaps the way the Southern writer is sometimes thought of in the States, as being someone distinct from writers centered in New England or New York or whatever, in that a lot of my short stories, for instance, have agrarian settings, the way Southern writers have agrarian settings. This is really difficult for me to answer, because I'm framing in my mind Canadian literature is a kind of regional literature, I think, and there are a few major figures who tend to dominate it, and in fact, it's awkward for me to think where I fit in.
Yeah. It is. So it probably wasn't a fair question. But
no, it's a perfectly fair question. I was thinking, for instance, someone like Robertson Davies, who American readers might know, I think is closer to an older English tradition of writing. Canadians are sort of hung between being Americans and Englishmen, and I think I'm closer to an American than I am an Englishman, where some of our older writers, say Robertson Davies, might seem more English to an American reader than American. I think that my writing perhaps is somewhat like the writing of the American South. That's the closest that I can come to it. And there are a number of other young Canadian writers like David Adams Richards, who writes about New Brunswick, a rural kind of community, who fit into that framework too. But Canadians, one of the perennial questions for Canadians is, who are they? Because they know they're not Americans, and they know that they're not Englishmen, but they're not entirely certain who they are if they're English-speaking Canadians. If they're French-speaking Canadians, they know very well who they are. But I think we are confused. So I was confused with my answer, as it was obvious.
Well, despite Canada's bulk, I have this feeling that it is overshadowed in terms of literature by its giant neighbor below the border. Is that a fair assumption?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that at all. You know, even the presence of American books and American culture is very strong in Canada. And I think in many respects the Canadians culturally are kind of a colonial people, in the sense that the American presence in television, radio, movies, and books is very powerful. I mean, it makes inroads in countries like France and England and China with Coca-Cola and all the rest of it, and sharing a common border. We even feel that power very strongly. I'm probably the last generation that, when I went through school, was basically educated in terms of literature with English texts. That when I grew up, when I was going to school, we read Kipling and Stevenson and Walter Scott and things like people like that. The generation now, when they are using school books, are reading people like Steinbeck, Hemingway, Fitzgerald, etc. So in a way, we're educated in American culture. We have Canadian writers are taught too, but I'm just saying that I think that the American cultural presence is very powerful in Canada.
Mordecai Richler told me that he left Canada because he felt it was, at least in terms of literature, extremely provincial. He went to London and lived there for quite a few years. Came back. I think he's still living in Montreal, though he comes to New York about every 2 weeks. He's a judge in the Book of the Month Club, mm-hmm. and he's trying to get his Broadway show based on Duddy Krivitz off as a musical, I think. Mm-hmm. He's been working on that for a long time. I don't know how successful he's been. But he felt it was time to go back. He felt that Canada was coming into more of its own. And I have that feeling, too. I think Canada, it seems to me, has much more of an identity and a power of its own that I didn't sense quite a few years ago.
I think that's very true. I think there's a generation of writers, Canadian writers like Richler, Margaret Atwood, Alice Munro, Mavis Gallant, Robertson Davies, who in fact became models for younger writers like myself. Richler said that when he looked at Canadian literature, when he was growing up, there was sort of Morley Callahan, and that the writers he admired were people like Evelyn Waugh or American writers. I think I come from a generation who, for the first time, have Canadian writers as models. When I began writing short stories, Alice Munro was my model. So we have writers who are presences for younger Canadian writers now. People like Alice Munro and Mavis Gallant publish regularly in The New Yorker, for instance. So it has changed a good deal. I think we've grown up a lot. But the American presence, I think, is still powerful, and tends in some ways to shape the way we write and think.
Are Canadians big readers?
I would say no. Canadians, like most North Americans, I don't think, are big readers. I would imagine that Europeans and the British read more than Canadians do. Canadians, like, I think, Americans, tend to turn to television and movies and records and cassettes and that sort of thing for entertainment. Though some Canadian writers, I mean, really have large and loyal followings. So I'm not really complaining, but I think that, say, compared to Europeans, Canadians are not great readers. French Canadians are great readers. They read their novelists and poets passionately and follow them very closely, and French Canadian writers have large sales of books, much more so than English Canadian writers, I think.
Has the separatist movement in Quebec done any damage to literature as a whole in Canada?
I think perhaps the separatist movement has done a great deal for French Canadian literature, made it very vibrant. Many of the best writers, I think, in Quebec or French Canada began in some sense as nationalists, as political writers. They may no longer be nationalists, but it was a great cultural awakening for French Canada. One of the tragedies of Canada, I think, is that there's not a great deal of cross-pollinization between French and English, and we're not particularly aware of French-Canadian literature, nor they of English-Canadian literature.
Well, isn't it true that Montreal became diminished as a capital, as a cultural capital, because of the separatist movement, with many of the English-oriented Canadians going to places like Toronto?
Well, there was some of that. I think that tended to be more business and commercial than it was cultural. There are many English-speaking Canadians who, in cultural spheres, writers, for instance, and visual artists, who have stuck with Montreal and stay in Montreal because they love the city and they love its cosmopolitanism. I think in many ways that the exodus was a business exodus out of Montreal rather than a cultural exodus. Though English-Canadian writers like Hugh McLennan and people like that claim to feel uncomfortable in Quebec now at times, as if they are really not full citizens, perhaps. I don't know. I should not even speak about this because I'm not. I don't know French Canada that well. I mean, I'm a visitor like any other visitor.
Well, from what you've heard, you live in Ottawa, right?
Yes,
that's the capital. So you must have a lot of input. How onerous have the laws been with regard to language there? It would seem to me that it would make it very difficult for English-speaking people to even want to stay there. If shopkeepers, for example, having to put up, I think they can put up signs in both English and French now, but I think at one time they can only put up French signs.
Yeah, at one time they could only put up French signs, and there was a wide-scale rebellion, in fact, against that. The language laws are being tested under our new constitution now, and there's been a whole series of legal challenges to many of these laws. I would say that English Canadians, who dominated Quebec for a long time, found it difficult adjusting to the French fact, but I think that they've done it more and more, and the French Canadian who always wanted to be master in his own house, perhaps in becoming master, may have gone too far initially, but I think there's an adjustment going on, and I think the experience by and large has been for the good.
Guy Vanderhaeghe, I enjoyed the short stories and My Present Age especially because I found the novel extremely easy to read. Clear, crisp, moving sentences. Certainly I'm not a ponderous writer. Things moved fast, and in fact I was able to read the novel in one sitting very easily without getting bored. So I think it's a wonderful book. And what are you working on now?
I'm actually working on two novels, both which are half finished. I had to suspend work on one because I moved and couldn't use the research library that I was using. I was writing a historical novel, so I began another. So I'm sort of hanging fire on two different books right now.
Is our obnoxious friend going to be back?
No. Our obnoxious friend, I think, is finished with. After I'd written the short stories, I knew I wasn't done with him, or he wasn't done with me. So he's in the past now, and I'm writing different kinds of things now.
Guy Vanderhaeghe, thank you very much for coming in and talking to me. I hope you enjoy your stay here in New York.
I'm loving New York, and thank you for having me.